listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at FancyPantsGangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
September. Traditionally the worst month for filmgoers. This sad collection of 30 days brings empty movie houses and cast-off films considered not fit for a regular release. But do not despair, gentle listener, as September also brings the latest edition of FancyPantsGangsters.com's never-passed-over film netcast, The Film Army. On this shortened edition, Courtney takes a look at the 2003 documentary Overnight, featuring Boondock Saints director Troy Duffy, as he deals with success by yelling at his friends. Nate delivers another dose of box office poison, this month looking at Catwoman, a film whose mere mention is considered a hate crime in 32 states. And finally, Evan sits down with controversial director and Troma Studios founder Lloyd Kaufman to discuss net neutrality as well as a possible Toxic Avenger remake. There will be no war room this month, but rest assured, the usual suspects are still arguing and calling each other names. They just aren't putting it on the internet. What is on the internet is this, the September 2010 edition of The Film Army.
Don't give up on your dreams. Grab the dragon by the tip of its wings. Don't give up on me, because a hero is brave and you were meant to be a champion, a champion. Yes, you'll become a champion, a champion, a champion. Yes, you'll become a champion.
Do you ever find yourself in a situation where you are a witness to complete and utter ignorance, and you realize that you aren't so much as offended as you are actually fascinated by it? Or have you been in the middle of an argument with someone who has lost all control, who is so out of touch with the reality of their situation that you and everyone around them is entertained by their baseless ranting? We all have friends, coworkers, or relatives that are often so strong in their convictions that they'll follow their own game plan, no matter how little it is based in reality, to its bitter and tragic conclusion. And this flaw in character is ever present in the 2003 documentary Overnight, which details the rise and fall of musician and filmmaker Troy Duffy. It all starts as a terrific Cinderella story.
Now, classic story of the Hollywood dream coming true, from bartender to movie maker overnight, with the bar thrown in as a bonus. Patrick Healy is live in West Hollywood with the tale.
Jess, we've all heard the legend of actress Lana Turner being discovered in a soda fountain. So what's wrong with a saloon being remembered as the launching pad for Hollywood's newest wonder kid?
Many aspiring directors out there often think about what it would be like to be granted that dream break and be given the opportunity to watch one of your ideas come to life on the big screen in a full-length feature film. This is precisely what happened to Troy when he sells his screenplay for the Boondock Saints to Miramax mogul Harvey Weinstein. Not only did Troy sell his Tarantino-esque story for $300,000, but he also agreed a deal to direct the movie on a $15 million budget, record the songs for the soundtrack with his band, The Brood, and finally have the bar he used to work in thrown in as part of the deal. I mean, this sounds like the perfect opportunity for any up-and-coming filmmaker slash musician slash scriptwriter. But this is where Overnight kicks into gear. It sheds light on the one-man wrecking ball that is Troy Duffy, and how quickly his luck would change.
Let the corruption begin.
The film was shot by Tony Montana and Mark Brian Smith, both co-managers of Troy's band, to document the process of creating the Boondock Saints and recording the movie's soundtrack. They're already completely within Troy's inner circle and capture every private moment, and are on screen a good deal of the time. They quickly come to see Troy emerge as a paper tiger. He is a pompous and arrogant man.
I hope to conquer the world.
This time, I am 100% right, and he is 100% wrong. So there.
First of all, I'm Hollywood's new hard-on. Why aren't they fucking giving that any credence?
Who is not afraid to, I guess, express his and vocalize his opinions with colorful language.
Fuck you, and with all due respect, Mark, if you agree with this shit, fuck you too.
I don't want to fucking hold everybody's goddamn hand all the time. Fuck you. We gotta show these cocksuckers, and that's what we'll do. We'll show them all.
In the process of getting his film made, he becomes his own worst enemy in fantastically self-destructive fashion. Troy does a lot of time explaining and convincing his bandmates and associates that he knows the inner workings of both the music and film industry.
And the way I think about it is, if I'm a fucking record company, I'm dealing with guys that live out of fucking garages and try to bang strippers to get fucking cheese sandwiches. We're coming to them with a fucking log pile of creativity saying we can handle it better than anybody ever has. That we're better than everybody. We have a deep cesspool of creativity here. If I'm a record company executive, I'm buying.
His bravado and machismo do not make him very many friends in Hollywood. His mouth and his bullying nature are his greatest strength and his largest weakness.
This whole fucking business is like a goddamn high school playground. Right. The biggest bully owns everything.
Right, you're the biggest bully.
Technically, me and CB are the biggest bullies.
No.
Troy's never happy. He's always yelling, pointing fingers, talking behind others' back, drinking his blues away night after night, and assuming he can charm anyone just by drinking with them. Troy has no issue with taking harsh pot shots at celebrities.
I hate Keanu Reeves. I think he's a fucking punk. I will never do a movie with him. I think Ethan Hawke is a talentless fool.
Who is this idiot?
Jerry Bruckheimer.
Jerry Bruckheimer. Con fucking air.
Because of the nature of his character, he seemingly fails to get any work done. His aggressive and bullheaded tendencies soon catch up with him. Here's Troy talking to the ICM agency on the phone.
So what are you guys going to do? What are you saying you're not going to stand for? What do you mean, what the fuck is that? You're acting like I'm financing this film. These decisions are being made for me here. Can't you guys understand that? Hey, Ed, we don't even have a goddamn movie yet, all right? We don't have a movie. Swayze said he passed. We're only like... What do you think I did? Say, hey, listen, I really want John Bon Jovi? You think that was like my doing or something? I didn't even know this cat was an actor, for Christ's sakes. Well, did I commit myself to John Bon Jovi during that conversation? No. I said I want to talk to your fucking client. And don't sit there and call me a fucking liar when you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I did not understand, I did not realize that he made any kind of pay or fucking play offer to anybody. I have not spoken with the fucking man. Don't call me a fucking liar, Joanne. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
After this series of intense arguments on the phone, we eventually find out that someone at Miramax has put the movie on turnaround. He ends up with a producer with less than half of the budget he could have had and is stuck with lower-tier actors. The part of Overnight that was more interesting to me personally was the story of his band, which consists of his brother Taylor and some friends from Colorado. We never get to hear any of their actual music, but they have an album available under the name The Boondock Saints. Troy is downright abusive and evil to these people who are supposed to be his friends, his brothers. In one interview, he tells of how the band wouldn't amount to anything if it weren't for him.
And these guys sometimes think that just because they're in a good band and just because they make good music, they would have got the goddamn record deal anyway. I know that wouldn't have happened. Well, let's face it, none of these guys got the fucking drive to do that, dude. And they're all like, fucking, oh, this is a band. We all did this. Did we all do this? I don't think so.
That's actually very true. But that he'd go on record the way he does against his friends is absolutely cruel. In one tense moment, when the band comes into some money, he goes off on the band managers, who are the directors of this documentary, about how they won't be seeing any of the money.
You might be fucking surprised with what we all fucking learned during this whole process, Tony, because with all due respect, nobody has ever been at the levels that we're at. Nobody has ever been directing a film and recording a fucking soundtrack with a band that's just been signed for 5 fucking albums of the biggest fucking record labels in the world. Nobody's ever done that, but we are.
It upsets me to hear you say that we don't deserve anything that we worked for.
Now, you know what? Deserves the wrong word. I am wrong. You do deserve it, but you're not going to get it.
At this juncture.
Yeah, at this juncture, you don't deserve that fucking money. Without a doubt. What do you have to say about that, Mark, please?
These are supposedly friends of Troy's that sacrificed their jobs and lives to support him and his band. They don't even have enough money to pay rent, while Troy finds them undeserving of money. The film's climax is a band meeting, an amazing moment where Taylor breaks down and cries, unable to criticize his brother's behavior. Troy, however, finds it quite easy to break his brother's heart. The band's debut album ultimately only sells around 700 copies, and they are quickly dropped from the label and break up. Back to the day jobs for everybody. Most people have met someone like Troy, someone who acts tough and thinks that they can talk themselves out of anything, that everything will go their way because they will it so, and assume they are in control. Even though the movie's success was all due to Troy's efforts, how could he not realize how lucky he is? Here's Sharon Waxman from the Washington Post.
From the moment that Harvey passed on the film, the movie, nobody was going to touch it. For the reason that he was Harvey's guy, Harvey found him, Harvey brought him out into the public eye, made him a star, set him up, gave him all these opportunities, and Troy blew it. His attitude is probably, I made you, I can unmake you, you know, or I made you, you don't appreciate it, fuck you.
I love documentaries where there's a character that frustrates you, a figure you hate and loathe so much you keep watching, waiting just to see their inevitable failure. Overnight conveys this character trait through the words and actions of Troy Duffy. As a fan of the Boondock Saints, this documentary showed me just how close it came to never seeing the light of day. I mean, I may never see the Boondock Saints in the same way again. From the comfort of my own couch, it seems so obvious that by not appreciating the opportunities and blessings Troy was granted, he inevitably screwed himself over. The solution to all of his issues is summed up nicely by Boondock Saints actor Willem Dafoe.
Troy, keep your mouth shut.
I'm Courtney Close. The documentary Overnight is currently streaming on Netflix and available on DVD.
Troy Greed.
I want to be. Freedom is power. To live a life untamed and unafraid is the gift that I've been given. And so, my journey begins.
Welcome to another edition of the Film Army's Box Office Points and DVD Review feature. I'm your host, as always, Nathan Hall. Now, without further ado, 2004's Catwoman.
What the hell is wrong with you, Phillips? Your incompetence is staggering.
Halle Berry from the X-Men stars as the improbably named Patience Phillips, a.k.a. Catwoman. Halle answers the age-old question, what would happen if you crossed Eartha Kitt and Julie Newmar with an overzealous dominatrix? Berry, of course, is the only person on the planet who can still wear baggy sweatpants and look beautiful rather than frumpy like the rest of us. Tragically, despite a really nice apartment, reporting directly to the CEO, and looking like Halle Berry, Patience is lonely and repressed. So, she tries to rescue Mysterious Cat from a ledge, and wouldn't you know it, her boss immediately murders her.
If you don't have an identity, why keep it a secret?
Because you killed me.
Sharon Stone from Basic Instinct is Laurel Hedare, the diabolical, kinky, long-in-the-tooth supermodel boss. Imagine a peroxide Cruella de Vil and you're halfway there. I'm just going to cut to the chase here, folks, and tell you that the climactic Stone-Berry catfight is probably the saddest thing I've seen since Crystal and Alexis went at it in Dynasty. In her defense, Stone delivers an excellent speech about fashion industry's disregard for women over 40.
What happened the other night?
I don't remember.
You died.
What?
You died.
A spinster cat lady slash reclusive academic, played by Frances Conroy from 6 Feet Under, does her best to save the script by explaining that the nature of Patience's powers belongs to an elite group of independent, misunderstood female subversives, a clandestine group that has existed for eons, meant to free other women from the shackles of conformity. Sadly, they are not called the Siamese Liberation Army. If only, if only. Also, worth peeling your eyes for is Lambert Wilson from The Matrix as a cosmetic kingpin, Alex Borstein from Family Guy as the chubby-slash-sassy best friend, and even Janet Varney from Dinner and a Movie makes a blink-and-you'll-miss-it cameo. The film was directed by the French auteur Pitoff, who did the special effects on Delicatessen and City of Lost Children, and directed, in my own opinion, the highly underrated Vidocq in 2001, so perhaps something just got lost in translation. I'm not sure, because I genuinely like this director. I have no idea what happened. So many unanswered questions. How did they find a scientist willing to say the line, "I can't live without turning people into monsters"? Why is Catwoman no longer the DC Comics villain Selina Kyle? Why do all the villains have to have an indeterminate European accent? Why do all gay co-workers punctuate their sentences with a sarcastic, "Hello"? Is this an actual city with a name, or just a place to shoot commercials and music videos? And is wearing costumes from Paul Verhoeven's Showgirls empowering or just trying too hard? Upon final analysis, I think Catwoman made the fatal mistake of hyper-editing the fun out of it. Batman movies are fun, in my opinion, because they're both campy and psychologically dark. Catwoman was really neither. It's just a hodgepodge of witchcraft, ancient Egyptian lore, pulp feminism, and a dash of S&M. Not to mention, it has the look and feel of a bizarre Eurotrash video game cutscene. But on balance, I can't totally fault anyone who manages to work in an obscure reference to the 1982 film Cat People. So they've got that going for them, which is nice.
It all started on the day that I died.
Tune in next month on Box Office Poison to hear my review of the 2003 film House of the Dead. This is Nathan Hall saying, if Box Office Poison isn't on your iTunes isn't really on.
This is Evan coming to you from the floor of Gen Con Indianapolis all the way back in August, early August here. And I'm sitting with a man who, in addition to being a B-movie film legend, is probably responsible for most of the nudity I saw in junior high. Mr. Lloyd Kaufman from Troma Films, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Evan. I'm a big fan of Phlegm Army and got a lot of phlegm myself. So, Troma Entertainment and the Toxic Avenger welcome you to the Tromaville booth here at Gen Con. And I'm glad that you have finally come out of the closet. It's about time.
Well, you know, I figured if you're going to do it, why not do it on a big weekend like this?
Well, you're brave and, you know, as
and I'm
a gay...
I'm among friends.
Yeah, that's right. You're you know, as a gay married man, I respect you for having the courage to deal with the truth publicly.
Well, thank you. Obviously, you've done plenty of conventions over the years, but I think this is your first Gen Con.
I have done many people at plenty of conventions, and this is the first Gen Con that I've been to, and I'm very grateful to the people at Gen Con for being so generous monetarily, and also to the fans here who have been buying the Troma movies, which is quite amazing, because I think we're the only movie company here. Mm-hmm. Ron Mackey is over here, one of the stars of Poultrygeist, and you can see him singing in Poultrygeist, and we've got hardly, we really don't have much left in the way of DVDs. The gamers have been buying up our DVDs.
So that kind of answers my next question, is how the show has been for you. Is this your first kind of gamer convention, or?
Well, you know, I get invited to a lot of the conventions, and they all, Dragon Con, for example, in Atlanta has a big gamer constituency. And I think that our demographic and the gamers intersect. But again, I'm pretty ignorant about gamer. And in fact, I was in the movie Gamer, though.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm in the movie with Gerard Butler.
Yep.
Gerard Butler. Neville Dean and Taylor directed it, and I have a huge part. You can see it. It's shot with a red camera. That's how good I am. It's a red camera.
You seem to be kind of the king of cameos. Looking at your IMDb page, there's a lot of man number two or guy at desk.
Well, if I'm in a movie, the Troma fans will buy it. And if that helps independent filmmakers, I'm very much trying to do everything I can to help independent art. And we have a tough time now because the conglomerates are much too powerful. The Viacoms and Rupert Murdoch, and they pretty much have their thumb on all the newspapers and cinemas and television stations. So it's important to help the independent filmmakers. And so if there's no budget, I act for free. And if, like in Neville Dean and Taylor and the bigger movies I've been in, those are just directors who like me, and those guys do pay me.
You've worked with a lot of people that are working now, directors, producers, things like that. And I was actually doing research for the interview. I read that you actually worked with a very, very young Oliver Stone.
Oliver and Stone and I grew up together. We were in second grade. We met in second grade. His parents and my parents were very good buddies. And my father actually, when Oliver Stone's dad made a noise like a frog, my father gave, and Roger Kirby, another childhood friend, donated, I think, $50,000 or $60,000 to Trinity School in the name of Oliver's dad. And I was making movies at Yale, and Oliver was there, and he got interested in movies because I was making movies. He was writing a shitty novel. And then it turned out he's a brilliant filmmaker, which he is indeed. And we made a couple of movies together, and then he became successful and dropped me, of course. As well he should.
One of the movies that you did make and are apparently now remaking, the original Toxic Avenger movie.
Well, I made the first... Michael Herz, my partner of 35 years, this is Troma's 36th year, we made the Toxic Avenger, and I am not remaking it. I am writing, we are writing Toxic Avenger Part 5, which will concern Toxie's adolescent twins. And a gentleman named Akiva Goldsman, who got an Oscar for a movie with Russell Crowe called The Dangerous Behind, he and his folks are remaking the Toxic Avenger. Akiva also directed, I think, the best film that's ever been made, Batman and Robin. And they will be remaking The Toxic Avenger. And what I hear, but again, I'm not in touch with them. You know, they obviously are paying us some money. But they, from what I've read, they've got Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise wants to play Little Melvin. Megan Fox.
He's got the height for it, so.
Yeah. And Megan Fox and then Cameron Diaz are in consideration. So, but again, this is only what I've sort of been reading on the internet.
Gotcha. So, but the remake does have your blessing, though.
Sure. Okay. I'm getting a big check out of it. And maybe they'll even listen. Maybe they'll ask me for advice. You never know. I think they're in good hands. They're going to make an $80 million wonderful kind of a PG-13 mask, be like The Mask, and it sounds like they'll get a really good writer director and blah blah blah. And, you know, Toxic Avenger was made into a musical, and I had nothing to do with that either, and it's really good. David Bryan of the Bon Jovi, he's Bon Jovi's keyboard guy, he wrote the music for Toxic Avenger the musical, and another guy, Joe DiPietro, who's a big Broadway writer, wrote it, and they won best off-Broadway play and every award you can possibly get, and the Toxic Avenger musical is playing all over the world now, and it ran in New York for over a year, which is pretty good. So, you know, it's good that they keep me out of these things. If they would have kept me out of the first Toxic Avenger, it would have been a lot more successful.
Well, you strike me as the kind of guy that would be against all the endless remakes being done in Hollywood right now. I guess I was a little shocked to hear that Toxic Avenger was being remade.
Well, I've been against the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre because I didn't get any money. Other than that, I'm all for it. Now, with Toxic Avenger, I will be getting a lot of money. So I'm very much in favor of getting money. And the remake, some of the best movies in history have been remakes. Judy Garland, George Cukor collaboration, A Star Is Born, was the third iteration of that particular film. All Quiet on the Western Front, the remake was much better than the original. Dawn of the Dead, written by James Gunn, could stand alone as a wonderful movie. It's equally as good as the original Dawn of the Dead, in my humble opinion, and a lot of people think it's one of the best zombie movies ever made. There have been many very, very good remakes. So there's no reason why the Toxic Avenger remake cannot be good, as long as they keep me out of it.
Going back to Toxic 5 now, is there any word on a release date on that yet? Has that been announced, or?
We've announced the fact that we hired the third screenplay writer.
Oh, okay.
So we've gone through three writers. That's about as far as we've gotten. It takes me a long time to make a movie. And Toxic Avenger Part 5, nobody wants to see our movie, so there's no reason for us to rush. We don't need to get a film ready for Christmas. That's Peter Jackson's job, not the Toxic Avenger Part 5.
But with a character like Toxic Avenger, is it harder to write the fifth one than the second or the third one, just knowing that there's all these people that, you know, despite what you may think, want to see this movie?
Well, it's hard to write, period, especially when you're a manic depressive and drunk. But not that I'm a manic depressive and drunk, I'm just thinking about Steven Spielberg. But no, just joking. He's a very healthy young man. It's always hard. The whole thing is hard. What makes it really hard, though, is even though Troma's famous and I'm of the underground people, I'm very famous as an underground person, which means nobody's ever heard of me. It's never been more difficult to get your art to the public. It's very hard to live off your art because the rules that have been put into, that were there to protect the public against monopoly, have been done away with. And now it is virtually impossible for an independent movie to get a wide audience unless that independent movie is owned or controlled by one of the vassals of the giant devil-worshipping international media conglomerates. And that's the problem. That is why it is, even if Troma has gone with the wind, it isn't going to get on television. Cannibal the Musical by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the South Park guys, has no nudity, and it's got a little bit of Monty Python humor. It has sold about 300,000 cassettes. Everybody loves it. It's never been on American television. Citizen Toxie, the Toxic Avenger Part 4, has never even been on HBO or Showtime or any cable TV. It's called Economic Blacklisting, and unless you're in with the big elite, you're going to be economically blacklisted. And that is really what makes it difficult. It's not making making movies is very difficult, but it becomes even more difficult now because the pathways to the public have been preempted and taken over and are the playground of the rich and spoiled and elite.
on that note, you've got this series of instructional DVDs called Your Own Damn Movie. You started with Make Your Own Damn Movie the first one?
Well, in terms of the instructional useful books, yes, I had written some books that were totally useless. But Make Your Own Damn Movie, Direct Your Own Damn Movie, Produce Your Own Damn Movie, and now Sell Your Own Damn Movie is in the works, and there are DVD box sets to go with them, which show behind the scenes lessons with Eli Roth and James Gunn and Neville Dean and Taylor, and you know, very very good instructional lessons, and most of the secrets of trauma filmmaking and independent filmmakers are unlocked in my film schools in a box. So I would say those are useful, but again, they're not easily found. The books are in Barnes & Noble, but the DVD box sets are economically blacklisted.
So people can't get them on Amazon or any of those things? Or can they get
you can get everything. You can get all the trauma movies, Direct Your Own Damn Movie, book and box set on Amazon or at www.trauma.com, safely and securely. Yeah, you have to make a little effort, though, but Best Buy or Walmart or most stores do not carry, in fact, no stores carry our movies that I know of.
What is your opinion of there's a lot of independent filmmakers and film studios doing internet distribution either on their website or through something like a Netflix. Is that something you would recommend as a longtime independent filmmaker? Or
right now I would recommend that everybody who is slightly independent of mind and body write to your congressman and the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, and urge them to retain and protect net neutrality on the internet, because without net neutrality, you will not have any audience on the internet. Right now, the New York Times has a full-page, front-page story on how Verizon and Google have conspired to get rid of net neutrality on the internet. That means that the democratic and free and diverse, you black people and you homos, that will go away. You will not have any rights on the internet the way it is now. Right now, the internet is democratic. Trauma gets 500,000 people on our website every month because we have an interesting website. We have just as much a level playing field as Disney or Paramount or Universal or NBC so that we can get to the public. But the bad guys, the big guys, are down in Washington 24/7 trying to destroy the net neutrality, and they are succeeding. So that will mean that forget about distributing your own movies on the internet. You'll be in public access TV on the internet. You'll be on the dirt road, and ABC, NBC, CBS will be running the internet, and it'll be just like TV. It'll be just like HBO and Showtime. Everything will be owned by the telephone companies and the big conglomerates like Rupert Murdoch. So we have to fight very hard to retain net neutrality on the internet. So write to your congressman and tell him or her that he or she or it will not be reelected if net neutrality goes away. There certainly won't be any more trauma if net neutrality goes away, because the reason we have millions of people watching our YouTube clips and is that we have it's a level playing field. So people can go and see the Lloyd Kaufman YouTube clips just as easily as they can go and see Mel Gibson.
All right. Well, two more quick questions.
Sure,
before
take your time.
Before
no rush. No rush.
I hate to. You're obviously a very busy man because you're making tons of movies right now.
Very, very busy.
What is next after Toxic Avenger, or is there anything in between then that we want people to know about?
Well, I want people to know that they should protect and preserve a net neutrality on the internet. They should not let the net neutrality get destroyed by the giant phone companies and the giant media conglomerates. But we're working on a movie called Father's Day. We're producing that. Mother's Day, my brother's film, Charles's film, has been remade. Darren Bozeman, who brought you Repo, the opera, and some Saw pictures, he's directed it. It looks really, really good. Big time remake. I think our fans will be happy to see that. I think that's going to be a very, very good movie. I think it's important just for people to get out there and protect independent art and commerce, and don't just listen to what the idiots on the Today Show have to tell you, because they're scumbags, that fat weatherman and those idiots. They just want to dumb you down and make you stupid so that you won't go out and find decent independent movies.
Who are you liking right now? That's I was thinking about asking your favorite trauma film, but outside of trauma, who's your favorite filmmakers right now?
Well, I don't really have any favorites, but certainly I thought that Todd Solondz's movies were very good. And I mean, there's some good mainstream movies. I just saw The Other Guys. I thought that was pretty good. That was hilarious. That was well written. That was excellent. Get Him to the Greek was intelligent. Hot Tub Time Machine. Those are all mainstream movies. The mainstream occasionally gets it right. Unfortunately, hundreds of millions of dollars are wasted on drivel like The Blind Side, which is just absolute garbage. Just baby food, pablum. And but there are tons of good movies. Takashi Miike, everything he does. Gaspar Noé, everything he does. The German guy, Herzog, he's great. He's about 100 years old. There's all sorts of good stuff out there. You know, I just saw a movie by Alain René, the French surreal director, called Crazy Grass, L'Herbe Folle. A very good film, surreal, but quite good. Certainly, Poultrygeist Night of the Chicken Dead surpasses all of the above.
Obviously.
But, you know, it's clucked up, of course, but it's a very excellent, and it's a poultry in motion. What more can I tell you? I would suggest that you go on at Lloyd Kaufman, which is my Twitter, or the Facebook for Lloyd. I usually talk about the movies I like, and not that my opinion means anything, but there are tons of good movies being made, and thanks to the digital revolution, the making of cinema has been democratized so that we all can make our own damn movies, and that is a wonderful blessing. It's great. The biggest problem, of course, is that, as I mentioned, the big conglomerates have pretty much eaten everybody's lunch, so it is very difficult to make a living. But, on the other hand, the business model may change because of all the file sharing and the different ways for people to get information. And as long as the internet stays free and open, I think we all have a good chance to survive and prosper and have real lives and be artists at the same time and not have to go out to work for the William Morris Agency and have to have lunch at the right restaurant and kiss ass and work the Xerox machine at Disney or drive around some movie star and be a personal assistant to some idiot who's making $20 million for one movie while 99% of the world is starving. There can be a great, wonderful golden age of cinema art as long as the internet remains open and free and diverse.
You mentioned Dragon Con. Where, other than Gen Con and on the internet, where can people see you in the next couple months here?
Oh, I'm going to Australia in October, Melbourne and Sydney, and Auckland, New Zealand. I'm going to Germany November, Prague in December. I'm all over the map. Go to my Twitter, at Lloyd Kaufman, and my schedule is posted at trauma.com. I think there's Monster Mania, there's Horror Hound, there's Rue Morgue Festival of Fear up in Toronto. Pretty much our schedule's on trauma.com or lloydkaufman.com or my Twitter or Facebook or www.younghairlessasianboys.com. I mean, you can find my schedule in many, many places.
Well, excellent. Well, I won't take up any more time. Again, Lloyd Kaufman from Trauma Films. Great talking to you. Great meeting you finally. Check out the website again. It's Trauma, TROMA.com, and get all the films. And make sure you're trying to find all the your own damn movie stuff. If you're interested at all in making your own movie, check this stuff out. I've actually seen the direct your own damn movie already, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. So.
Did you like the interviews with Eli Roth and James Gunn and all of the other directors? Stan Lee talks about how he sees movies, and I think that's the most valuable part of my DVD box sets, as you can learn from a lot of these younger directors who have made it in this very difficult climate. and who are doing things like Trey Parker and Matt Stone, where they have total freedom, but yet they're doing good things, and they're doing things for the mainstream.
There you go. That was Lloyd Kaufman, and I am, again, Evan from the Film Army, and we will just continue on with the show right after this.
For as long as the internet is safe and neutral, the Film Army will be there to fight for the cause of films and filmmakers everywhere. And while the Film Army supports net neutrality, we also support Netflix neutrality, because free two-week trials know no borders, no ideology, and no cost due to their freeness. And while freedom may not be free, Netflix can be. So be sure to go to bit.ly/FPJflix to get your free trial and help support the Film Army advance the cause of freedom. Also free to all loyal listeners are our forums, as are our Facebook page and our Twitter feed at twitter.com/FilmArmyFPG. There may be a small fee for disloyal listeners. If you are interested in joining the Film Army by submitting a segment for next month's show, or have a question or comment, please send them all to film@fancypantsgangsters.com. Until next month, freedom lovers, good luck, Godspeed, and keep watching movies.